KAA Radio Live. We are talking with Clay Pressley, passenger on the Miracle on the Hudson flight. Also joining us, Sally Sullenberger and Jeff Skiles. You two have been very quiet while Clay's been talking. You've trained him well, haven't you?
Well, Clay's been taking it. I just told Sully, let's go to lunch.
No, seriously, there are a lot of stories I haven't heard yet, and I've heard much of Clay's, but I still haven't heard all the details about what it was like in the cabin. How quiet was it? What were people doing and saying and thinking? Were people counting down as we were approaching the water by looking out the cabin windows? Those kinds of things.
So you two are in the front, working the problem, right? Now we've landed. Our story picks up with you, Clay. You're out on the wing. Now you're waiting for the boats.
Okay. Now, yeah, I'm out on the wing, and you know, they did a great job of putting us right down between the ferry docks in New Jersey and the ferry docks in New York. And so we're sitting there. I'm on the end of the wing, and the lady next to me says, "Well, there's a boat. It's coming down the river." And she said, "Maybe they'll pick us up." And I look up the river, and there's this giant super tanker coming down the river at us. And I said, "We just better hope he stops before he gets to us." But after what seemed like a lifetime, I mean, you really did feel like you were standing on that wing for a long time. I saw the wheelhouse of the first ferry, and it was on the other side of the fuselage. But I could see the wheelhouse from where I was. And then that was the second time when a tremendous amount of stress was relieved, and you were able to say, "All right, we're gonna get out of this, because no matter what, even if we're in the water, these guys ought to be able to pick us up." But does anybody know the name of the first ferry captain besides you two that picked us up? Great name, Vince Lombardi. Good Wisconsin.
Good.
But anyway, so Vince is over there, and I'm on the tip of the wing, and just to make sure that Vince saw that I was there, I was over there waving at him. Said, "Okay, we're on this side. Forget those guys. Come on this side." But as I'm standing on the tip of the wing, that was the first time that I thought about my associate that was on the plane. I was traveling with a gentleman named Bill Nix, and Bill was seated in row 23B. So I felt this real sense of guilt at that point, because all I thought about at that point was myself and the instinct to get out of there and try to survive whatever was going to go on. So now I'm on the wing, and I start looking for Bill, and I can't find him. He was in the back, so I kept looking for him to come out one of the wing exits. I couldn't obviously see on the other side. But eventually I called him, and he was actually on the way over to New York side in a ferry, and he was sitting in the raft with Sully, so I didn't look up in the front because I didn't expect him to be there. But Bill had a little bit different experience. You'll hear from a lot of passengers, the people in the back, the water started coming in pretty quickly, and so there's a real sense of urgency to get out of there. The aisles were filling up because people were slow getting out on the wings, and so it was difficult for them to really stay in the back as the water was coming up. I don't know how many of you may have heard Doreen tell her story, because she was the flight attendant that was in the very back. But she had a totally different experience than a lot of us in the mid to forward part of the plane. So they ended up, Bill actually ended up climbing over the seats, getting past the exit row, wing exits, and going in and getting in the rafts in the front, which several of the passengers in the very back did that.
So once the rescue was over, does everybody just go their own separate way? Was there that's part of the story that I've never heard. I know sort of what's happened, you know, to Sully and Jeff, but what about the rest of the passengers?
With me, they took us over to a restaurant on the New Jersey side of the river, and then they took us to the senior center in Weehawken. And the one thing that all of the passengers, and I'm sure the crew and Sully certainly felt, the one thing that we were waiting on was we wanted to make sure that everybody got out of that flight alive. It would have been a totally different story had just one person not survived that. And there was a little bit of humor that you were using to try to relieve the stress. But once that call came that said everybody's accounted for, then you could really let loose, and you could really have some fun with the other passengers and really get to know the other passengers.
Well, it's been a little while since that fateful January day. How did the three of you get reconnected?
Well, first of all, I think Sully and I reconnected first. It was in, I believe it was May, and I happened to be in San Francisco, so I was talking with his people. trying to make arrangements. And he was actually had flown back from Washington that day from the NTSB hearing regarding the emergency landing. And he agreed that we would meet at the airport. So we met at a coffee shop at the airport, and it's very emotional for me because it was the feeling and all that day was just there was so much emotion to it that it's taken quite a while to really understand what you were truly feeling. But I met with Sully and we had great conversation, and he asked me a couple of things. First thing he asked was, what was it like in the back of the plane? And of course, me being sarcastic, I said, you were only 40 feet away. It wasn't much difference. But what I think he was truly asking, I think I came to my senses and realized, you know, what was it that you were going through? How did it feel not really knowing what was going on back there? And so I thought about that question for a long time, and I continue to think about how to give a really good answer to that. And then the last thing Sully said as we were departing, he said, Clay, you know, we're only going to be in this limelight for so long, and we all need to do as much good as possible during that period of time. And I thought that said a lot about him and who he was as a person, and also a lot about the opportunity that we all had in front of us to do some good things with this. And then with Jeff, I think it was about a year later, we met at the anniversary.
Well, keep in mind that Clay's a real media hound, so you saw him on just about every program about the. I mean, I felt like I knew him, even though I didn't. You know, just from the shows.
I was just doing the good things that Sully asked me to do. No, but Jeff and I ran into each other on several occasions, and I had an opportunity to go to Wisconsin to do a film for who was that? You remember you were in it too?
Oh, it was some Canadian broadcasting company. Now, what are you going to be shown in this country? It was it's going to be shown on History Channel Canada's Discovery United Kingdom, and they've been bugging me for an interview for about 3 months, and I'd already quit doing interviews for that kind of show. So I actually, I figured I'm just going to stop it right now because I know that they're all about journalistic integrity. So I said, you know, to get her to quit calling me, I said, okay, here's what I'll do. I'll do it for $3,000. It's got to be done at my house, and you better have the check in your hand as you're coming through the door. And I expected him to say, oh, no, we can't possibly pay for an interview, you know, which is fine with me. I didn't want her, you know, and she said, sure, when can we schedule it? And when she showed up, doorbell rings, she's got the check in her hand.
You
but
got
anyways,
paid?
Then she calls me and she says, oh, one of the passengers is coming up from North Carolina for the interview. And now I felt really bad because I'm getting paid for this and Clay's coming up, you know, spending a weekend of his time to come up here. And in fact, when I saw him, I said, why did you do this? It's not even going to be shown in this country. Who cares about this interview? So I took him out to make up for it. Little bit. I took him out flying in my Waco. You know, we went down. We had a nice little flight. We went out for dinner with a bunch of the guys at the airport. And I think Clay really liked hanging around the guys, and the guys really liked Clay because he bought.
That's a sure in at any airport.
Oh, there's one thing I've learned about pilots, and that you're not a good pilot unless you don't take anything that's free. Right. If it's free, you're a good pilot there if you take go. It. And that's true. And Jeff, it's funny, when I was going up for the interview, he sends me this note and says, can I take you flying in a proper airplane? And I said, sure. So he sends me this picture of this 1935 Waco, and I'm saying, oh, my gosh, here we go. But that day was really kind of a turning point for me because between what Sully kept asking me about how was it, or he asked me that one time about how was it that, how'd you feel in the back? What was it like in the back? And then going up with Jeff in the Waco, I became interested in trying to get my pilot's license. And so I started flying, I started lessons October 2nd. This, I think, was in August that you took me up. And so this past year, October 2nd, I started taking flying lessons. And the other thing that we all have in common up here is we're all now pilots. So.
Congratulations.
An amazing story from the splashdown in the Hudson to private pilot certificate. Do you have a favorite airplane that you fly now?
Well, the main airplane that I was training in was the 172, and it's been wonderful.
Just remember, I don't know if you heard Captain Cernan when he left, when he said, when I asked what's his favorite airplane, the standard answer is, whatever one I'm flying now. All right? So that'll also make you a good pilot.
I'll remember that for
good.
The future.
Any final thoughts before we run out of time here this morning from any?
I just wanted to say, you know, I think for Clay and for a lot of people on the airplane, Flight 1549 was a life-changing event, and for many, they felt like they had a second chance. And it was an opportunity to take a survey of their lives, see if they were living the life that they really wanted to live or not. And I think Clay had always had a lifelong passion that he had never pursued. And he decided it was time to do it, and we're very glad that he did.
Jeff?
Yeah, I've gotten to know Clay quite well, mostly being asleep on his boat, trolling around the Bahamas fishing while he's up on the fly bridge? What do you call that thing?
Flybridge.
Well, you know, he's playing captain himself up there. And, you know, Clay is an absolutely great guy. I really enjoy having him for a friend. And I made a lot of new friends from this whole experience with U.S. Airways Flight 1549. And I include every one of you in that number. Thank you.
If you would like to hear more about Clay's story and more with Sally and Jeff, they're doing a forum at 1 o'clock. Which building are you in?
I don't know.
There. Check your forum schedule. But at 1 o'clock, they will be doing a more in-depth interview than we had time for today. But I appreciate you taking time to join us. Sally Sullenberger, Jeff Skiles, Clay Presley, brand new private pilot. Congratulations. Welcome to Oshkosh. And I hope you enjoy your stay here.
Thank you. It's been a wonderful experience.
From the EAA Welcome Center, I'm Steve Buss on EAA Radio.